Hey, this is Megan Rapinoe.
And I'm Sue Bird.
We've decided to turn our crazy IG live show into a podcast for your listening pleasure. Enjoy the show.
A Touch More.
New episodes of A Touch More drop Tuesday only on the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Be sure to subscribe to the show on Spotify, Apple, or anywhere else you listen to podcasts.
Blue Wire.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! It's over! It's over! Cleveland is a city of champions once again!
The Cleveland Cavaliers select Colin Sexton, Darius Garland.
Here comes Sexton, some rhythm.
And he got it! Young ball continues to wear him out!
Do you know what the Cavs fans are calling the Darius Garland, Colin Sexton backcourt?
What?
Sexland.
Oh, that's good.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Blue Wire Network. I'm your host, Justin Rowan, and with me today is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how's it going, buddy?
Well, you completely fucking botched the intro before this, so I think you thought you were going to get it off without a perfect crime, so to speak, for the listeners, and I bait and switched you. See, you thought you were going to get away with it, but you didn't.
See, it's nice to be podcasting with just you, Carter. We don't have any guests today. This feels nice because we haven't done this basically since before our A City of Champions project that we were working on, which for all, everybody listening, there is now an individual feed. You can search A City of Champions, and there's a standalone feed with just those episodes in case you want to find those. And just so that they're not hidden in our feed as we continue to put more podcasts out.
Should tweet that out, huh?
Yeah, we should probably do that. I was waiting until after this podcast.
I've been forgetting to be honest.
But Carter is, of course, alluding to my botched intro on Twitch, which you can check us out on Twitch live when we're doing our podcast at Chase Down Pod at Twitch TV. But the one thing he has not accounted for is the fact that I am editing this podcast, and I can get rid of anything you say. So
as long as I don't have to edit, I think that's an okay, that's okay with me, pal.
Well, it's good to be back podcasting with you today, Carter. And there's actually a little bit of news, with this whole COVID-19 thing. Obviously the season has been on delay and it does seem like there's going to be news in the next few weeks. Adam Silver said that he's hoping to make a decision within 2 to 4 weeks about a return to play. Obviously, we don't know any of the particulars at this time. I think there's an assumption that there's going to at least be a training camp to help mitigate some of that injury risk. But we don't know if there's going to be some regular season games or games that count towards the regular season. We don't know what shape this is going to take. So it's possible that we could have some Cavs basketball in the near future. And understandably so, it seems like everybody's kind of got some mixed feelings about that.
Yeah, I know you're always a sucker for a Sonny reference that derails the podcast.
Yes.
And when you said the word news 9 times, all I could think of was Mac bursting into the bar going, "News, I've got the huge news." And he's wearing the duster.
Absolutely. Normally you compare me to Frank, so I feel like being compared to Mac is good, especially when we're talking about my quarantine bod. I think it resembles Mac in the most recent seasons.
I was about to say, because Mac right now is fucking shredded.
You know what? It's goals. Yeah, Mac is absolutely goals. But there was more news today as well. Initially, when practice facilities were opened up, Larry Nance Jr. had talked about kind of being excited to get back at it. And he spoke out again today, talking about having some trepidation and some concern about the NBA as they potentially return to play for players like himself that potentially could be in jeopardy. He has an impacted immune system as a result of Crohn's, and this is a really difficult situation. And normally with the podcast, when we aren't experts on things, we bring someone on, we let people know where our blind spots are. But, you know, there aren't really experts on this. And this is just a very, very difficult situation. And I have to balance, one, wanting basketball back and wanting to see the Cavs play with the fact that, hey, I'm glad I'm not making this decision, but I have absolutely no idea what the right decision is. And the right decision, honestly, probably is not returning to basketball. But I at least understand and support their right to kind of workshop something and attempt to come back. But I'm not afraid to acknowledge that this is a very complicated situation.
Yeah, well, first off, I want to be clear. There are experts.
Well, we
epidemiologists, for
there
example.
Are experts, but we still don't we're know everything
yes,
about
of this. Course. Of course. I is just what wanted I mean. To poke fun at you and continue my run of contributing nothing meaningful to the podcast so far. Yeah, it's a really weird spot, right? Because on one hand, I think we all know we don't need this. Like we don't need to do this. No. I do think that it's a little weird that I think it's a little weird that the players seem to have veto power on this. Like they're the most impacted. Like I feel like it's a weird like high horse of like, listen, you know, these players, it needs to be their call. And like part of me is like, yeah, but like also like they're like arena workers and like there's going to be a lot of support workers that are brought in here. But like I don't want to speak too out of my ass here. But like I work with a lot of people who are intimately involved with the gig economy, a lot of broadcast crew people. And, you know, people are really desperate to get back to work. And so it's just really complicated, man. The one thing I won't do is pretend like I've got the moral high ground here. Cause even if I think that they shouldn't come back, what am I not going to watch? I don't really think that's the case.
I don't feel the need to pretend that my emotions match what my brain is telling me is the right decision.
And that's actually an excellent way to frame it. Because my heart is going, basketball!
Right. And I feel like, especially on Twitter, I think this happens a little too frequently where people say, okay, I know what the correct response is supposed to be, and that is what I'm going to echo. Like, let's take it back to something stupid, like Kevin Durant joining the Warriors. I understand everybody has the right to choose where they want to work. He's a free agent. You have a right as a fan to be emotional about that and not a huge fan of it. You don't have to act like you did something wrong, but as a fan, you can get upset and you can shit all over him or do whatever you want with that information. And I have to believe the NBA understands that if they attempted a comeback and this goes very poorly, there's going to be a lot of backlash. So I even though this may not be the smartest decision, I have to imagine that they're going to really think this out and have some confidence that they can pull this off in a contained environment. They've talked about using Disneyland, where it's basically players, family, and crew all go there. I'm assuming they'd all have to isolate during that time or after that time. And then they're basically on an island hoping that there's no contamination that gets in there. And if players and their families are okay with trying that out, I'm not going to sit here and say, well, they're making a mistake or they shouldn't be allowed to give it a shot. The one thing I will say, though, is I don't think that there should be any penalty to players that decide to not participate. If Larry Nance Jr. feels, okay, there's going to be 5 games that count towards the regular season, that we aren't playing for anything, and even if we were, I'm not really comfortable with this. If he wants to sit out, I don't think that there should be any penalty for those players.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Especially, I don't know, man. This is where it gets really wonky is you need – oh, Stowe, thank you so much for the Prime sub. I think that it gets really wonky because, you know, yes, we need to get some kind of preseason, quote unquote, that kind of gets guys ramped back up. Here's the problem. Larry Nance is on a bottom 3 team in the NBA.
Yeah.
Like, it's got to feel pretty silly for these stellar dwellers to have to come in and play 10 games so LeBron James feels like he's in good enough shape. So, like, I don't know what the right call there is. Like, everything feels pretty dissatisfactory and or unsatisfactory. I think dissatisfactory is not a word. I think that, like, that kind of has to be the way it is. Like, if you're going to do this, you have to, like, just make a bunch of concessions that are kind of dumb to force it through, because ultimately the idea of a bubble city for the, you know, the 19-win Cavaliers or whatever the hell they're at is it's silly. It's very silly. But,
it's big for my over bet, Carter.
The over bet is hanging by a thread.
Well, I think there's one factor where the television deals, I've seen this reference where they have to get to 70 games to reach a certain point in the contract. And I think on average, we're around 68. So I understand that for lottery teams, they want to even things out. But I mean, ultimately, the lottery is so flat already. I'd be okay with flattening the odds even further for, like, let's say the bottom six teams or something like that temporarily. I know the NHL.
The fuck are you doing? do that.
Carter, I don't care.
Don't suggest that.
No.
No.
Maybe falling back is going to get us into the right decision and away from Anthony Edwards.
Chad, please yell at this man. Hey, I think if you picked in the top five, you shouldn't get to pick in the first round for the next 3 years. That's just what I think.
Okay, Bill Simmons. But as a point of reference, one thing the NHL is trying to do with their comeback is they're basically having two host cities. They're looking at options there, and they're expanding their playoffs. I think it's like 22, 24 teams or something like that, because there were teams on the bubble. Quite a few teams on the bubble, so they're going to basically have the two conferences play in those cities and go straight to playoffs after a training camp. I don't know if that's something the NBA would look at. There's obviously going to be an asterisk on this season if they are able to complete it. And I mean, the reality is we could start again in Disneyland or whatever the case is going to be and still not get through whatever version of the playoffs they want to do. And I have to imagine that the backlash would be pretty rough in those situations.
You know what I'm wondering? Is the backlash going to be rough, Justin? Because part of me is like kind of thinking like, I think we think the backlash will be rough, and maybe on Twitter it will be, but like, I don't think anyone cared that someone in the UFC card that just played or that just happened had to withdraw because he tested positive for Corona.
Well, I mean,
like,
let's...
I don't know if the general public actually gives a shit about the health of these guys as long as they don't die. And I know
that was the point I was about to bring up.
Maybe they'll get... And, like, this is very macabre to talk about, but I guess it's what we have to kind of discuss and talking about ramifications.
Yeah, this all sucks. So that qualifier is thrown on everything we're saying.
Yeah, if a person with pre-existing conditions or even it does happen to healthy people have a very adverse reaction, then something bad happens, then the NBA is really, really exposed.
Right.
But I
think you can look at the Russian league where they attempted to restart and a trainer died. We have to understand that this is a deadly virus. And even if you do survive, there are cases where surviving people have decreased lung capacity and long-term ramifications. We don't know if there's long-term impacts for people that aren't displaying symptoms. So, it's a tricky thing. I mean, I'm not afraid to acknowledge the fact that I'd like games to come back. I would love if they were able to pull this off on an island where there's no fans. We get a little weird with the broadcast and all that, and nothing bad happens. Like, even if it's a bad decision, sometimes bad decisions can work out. And I would certainly be rooting for that because, I mean, the reality is, even with things starting to open up now, we're still in some version of this for the long haul, and we're going to have to go through cycles of, all right, adjusting to whatever new information is coming out. If there's an outbreak, you have to kind of pull things back, and that has impacts on everybody's jobs, that has impacts on people's lives, and sports does play a role in providing that distraction. And I mean, selfishly as well, as someone that has a Cavs podcast, a basketball podcast, I want basketball to talk about. We've basically gone through an off season's worth of these last 2 months without any off season, without the weirdness that normally accompanies basketball's off season. And it's not the easiest thing in the world.
No, this is our favorite hobby, after all. And I do think that, and I mean, unless you picked up crocheting in the last couple months,
I don't have any healthy hobbies that I've picked
you
up.
You don't. Over that's the last actually, few months. That's actually really accurate. You don't have a single healthy hobby.
Hobby that I've developed over this break is something that I will not be able to afford the therapy to undo for a very long time.
That's good. Stowe in the chat asked if either of us have picked up birding yet.
Yeah, you know what? Shout out to Joe, because I added, peeling back the curtain here. So for those that don't know, we do have a Discord for the Chase Down podcast, and we open up channels whenever they're requested, basically. And we now have a bird watching one, and it's genuinely fascinating. I have heard our listeners and so talk about bird watching, and it was captivating. And some of that had to do with the state I was in at the time that he was describing it to me.
Uh-huh.
And
uh-huh.
The other half was genuinely fascinating.
Well, you know who really floored me as a birder? Is Jeff Nomina, friend of the pod, regular guest. He's talking about seeing an Oriole with, you know, absolute glee. I just didn't know that there was this. I thought this was a much more niche community. Cy in the chat just said Carter hates birds. I do hate birds. I'm very anti-bird. I get nothing out of them.
Ugh, God.
I'm not anti-bird, but I'm certainly not pro-bird.
You know what? That's fair. I do hope that our listeners have picked up healthier habits than me,
like birding.
Pardon me. Yeah, like birding, or you know what? Gambling can be fun when done in moderation. And you know what? It's something that if you set your own limits, you can have some fun with. I mean, Carter, you're certainly an advocate for that. And do you have a little something there for our listeners if they want to take part in that healthy habit?
Well, boys, healthy habit, that's what it is. There's no shortage of action going on at our exclusive partner, Bet Online. NASCAR is back. I know a lot of people jumped in gambling on that one, just scratching that itch. And Bet Online has hundreds of other games, events, and sports to get in on. That's it, get it on. I'm like, whoa.
No, that's our next sponsor.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. You can still bet on simulated NFL, NBA, and UFC events 24/7. Again, I hate to poke at our partners at Bet Online because, we love them. But I don't think you need to bet on simulated UFC at this point. The real thing's back. Anyway, you can also participate in a $10,000 Madden Bracket Challenge, a March Madness-style NFL simulation tournament you can enter for free coming up on next Sunday. BetOnline has ex-Chicago Bulls Ron Harper, Horace Grant, Bill Cartwright, and Craig Hodges joining them to discuss the Michael Jordan documentary on what they're calling the final dance. Visit betonline.ag and use promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your new welcome bonus and check out all the action. BetOnline, your online wagering solution.
Carter, after these ad reads, we are going to jump into the GOAT debate, something that normally makes me very, very flaccid. I am excited to talk about it this time around, but you know what? We have to acknowledge that you're not always going to be in the mood, and sometimes when you are in the mood, you want to last a little bit longer. That's why our friends at Blue Chew are here to help you last longer and go a few extra rounds. Go to BlueChew.com. BlueChew.com has the first ever chewable that brings your performance in the bedroom to another level. They got the same active ingredients that are in Viagra and Cialis, so you know that they work. And since they're chewable, they work faster. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. Plus, you don't have to go to the doctor's office or spend time waiting in a pharmacy line. BlueChew's online physician is free of cost, and once approved, your order ships straight to your door in discreet packaging. Here's a great deal for you guys. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first order free when you use promo code BLUEWIRE. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BLUEchew.com, promo code BlueWire. Carter, they mixed up. They mixed up the copy a little bit, and I think I did okay.
Well, I was going to say, you were really freelancing off the front end of the copy there, and I was really worried you weren't going to be able to find your way, because I thought your segue was really good, but it did lead you down a road that didn't really align with the start of the copy, and I got to say, I'm actually proud of the way you got through it.
Thank you. You know what? We're a little bit rusty. We're not at our best. We were still kind of in off-season mode, but you know what? I wanted to play around, try some things out, and anytime you can jazz up the copy, that's always good. And I hope Kendon, if he's listening, enjoyed that, our friend with the Ad Read podcast.
Yeah, I think he did. I think we did okay. I don't want to say that we didn't bring the same verve that we normally do, but you know, it's been several weeks in a row of Blue Chew. And I wonder if we're running out of gas a little bit on that one.
Oh, no.
Need to pop a couple Blue Chews.
I was about to say.
Get ourselves back.
That would not be
go.
A ringing endorsement if we were running out of gas when it comes to Blue Chew. I can still go a few extra rounds, Carter. And Blue Chew, promo code BlueWire, is certainly going to help us out with that. Malcolm in our Twitch feed does point out makes a very good point that Colin Sexton seems to be getting after it during this hiatus. That man is going to come back and be able to defend centers. I'm convinced that a few months of pushing cars around is going to do him a lot of good. I saw someone actually point out and compare his work ethic to Marcus Smart. And that actually kind of seems a little bit fitting. Luckily, Sexton actually has some offensive touch to go along with his new jacked physique.
And a quarter of the awareness. I'll tell you what, if he needs to put just as much work into his ad reads. Poor guy is.
I have not listened to any of his endorsements, but I will.
Well, they are. He's getting there. You know, they're not quite Timofey Mozgov for that. You remember that old Beer Garden commercial that went viral?
Mm-hmm.
That was. It's not there. But it's, but we're getting there.
He'll get there. I mean, if we were doing this back when I was 20 or 21, this would be a bigger disaster. I can't talk now, but it was worse even back then. But you know what? You get better over time. And I want to talk, there isn't a seamless transition to this, but I want to talk a little bit about The Last Dance, as well as the whole GOAT debate that's been going on. Because The Last Dance has been very, very welcome for myself. Just anything basketball, I am willing to consume it. I have seen the critique that this isn't a hard-hitting documentary. I don't know about you, Carter. I think this is a great place to start this off. I don't really necessarily need hard-hitting documentaries when it comes to my bullshit entertainment. Like, I don't need an OJ Made in America when it comes to Michael Jordan. How do you feel about it?
I don't know. I just feel like I would like it more if the discourse was better. I think that, like, my biggest gripe isn't that it's not a documentary. It's that America thinks it is.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, oh, man, this guy definitely is the GOAT after seeing this. Like, it's fine if you think he's the GOAT. And I think we're going to talk about that. But, like, the documentary can't be the reasons you feel like it is. That's right, kind of my big gripe.
Honestly, it's kind of funny because the documentary, and we see clips of it throughout it, but it kind of reminds me of media at the time. Like, so many of the clips, it really seems to be building up and hyping up every single matchup, kind of pushing the positive stories. And I think at times it was a little unfair to people. Like, I think Isaiah Thomas kind of got a shit deal in the documentary. And
no.
I think other teams could have had a little more time. I would have liked to see more. I would have liked to see more on the 98 season. I felt they were giving so much context that they didn't dive deep enough into what would have been a really interesting season to go a little deeper on. But
yeah,
overall,
I mean, this is
like seeing basketball celebrated though. And to me, that aspect of it is refreshing because you contrast that to what we have today. And it's people taking, even if it's an opinion they have, they take it to such an extreme, and the other person takes the other side of that to extremes, and it feels so disingenuous.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been a lot of fun to watch. It is ultimately, I don't know, maybe that is what it is. It just needs to be fun, and we don't need to have any further discussions about kind of the implications of it. I do think that you're right that, you know, I think if I have a, you know, I work in TV production and video production for a living, so like that always changes the lens through which I look at this kind of stuff. I know that's like an annoying thing to say, but it's true.
Right.
Like, I always feel like when you're cutting together a story, like the more specific you are, the better it tends to be. And the more you try to capture everything and please everyone, the more you kind of get burned. And I do think if anyone's had a critique of this documentary, other than its shaky journalistic standards, it's that it's a little too meandering.
Yeah.
Kind of jumping back and forth. And I think they've done about as good as you can in the context of like, okay, we are going to do our Rodman episode on the 98 season. So we're going to tell the entire story of Rodman leading up to the 98 season. But I just feel like, you know, I always talk to, when I'm talking to like on-air talent stuff producing, I always talk about perk up moments. Like when they say something that makes me pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest perk up moments in this show, in this documentary series, are those behind the scenes clips that we've never seen before that they kind of sold the documentary on, to be honest.
Right.
Just like, hey, we're going to give you access like you've never seen before. And like, as good and interesting as the Isaiah versus Jordan thing for the Dream Team, like, yeah, that's super interesting. But you know what? I've seen that before because the NBA TV did a really, really good Dream Team documentary.
Mm-hmm.
What I've never seen before is Jordan bullying his teammate on the plane for drinking too much and sleeping with too many women. Like, those are my favorite parts of the series so far.
Oh, man, I enjoyed it so much. And I couldn't believe people were, like, getting into a serious debate about that sort of thing. I think whether he's a piece of shit or not,
that's interesting and fun.
Yeah. No. I mean, nobody gets this good without being a dick in some regard. And whether or not they're able to hide it doesn't change the fact that, you know what, they're probably a little bit of a dick. They're probably a little insanely competitive. But I think you touched on a really good point, which is we've had some great documentaries about this era. Like the Bad Boys 30 for 30 was fantastic. The Reggie Miller one is fantastic. So when you see those topics kind of loosely referenced in this documentary, you instinctively want more because you've kind of dove into those subjects and you understand that there's so much more. And when the Bad Boys documentary was talking about Rodman in those early years, it was soul crushing. Like, it was genuinely sad, and it was so well done. I just wanted a little bit more, and I think I would have liked to see more on 98, as I mentioned. But
one thing I want to before you pivot off the actual documentary discussion, I did want to bring this up because Malcolm in the chat just said, one thing I am sure of after watching it is that LeBron has had much tougher competition. And do you feel like that's the case? Because it's really weird because there are so many iconic players from that era, but I do feel like the level of competition was lower. What do you think about that?
You know what? I agree to some extent. I want to be careful because I do think the stars of this era, even though the maybe baseline average talent is lower than it is nowadays, I do think that the stars would be dominant no matter when they played. And Mike is certainly no exception to that. Jason Maples, I thought, made a really good point where it was, even though the average player is less talented, there seemed to be a little more team basketball. Everyone was being asked to do a little bit more in that era. Whereas now, I think we're seeing more and more specialized roles and guys creating for basically the entire team. And that's something that I don't necessarily love as much with today's game. I do think that the competition is a little tougher now. I think advancements in training and all that has made a huge impact. I think today's NBA is more difficult as well because you don't have guys locked into very long-term contracts. They can leave after 1 or 2 years, and even a perfect situation like Golden State, you win Golden State with KD, I should specify, only two titles out of that. Whereas Scottie's locked in for 7 years and he's getting paid less than the guys that make Jordan shoes.
That's actually a really good point. And it's a double-edged sword, right? Not only does Jordan get to keep Scottie the entire stretch run of the 90s, no other super teams are being formed in the interim to chip at their knees, so to speak.
Right, right. And I think it's unfortunate that we didn't get a Bulls versus Rockets finals with those 2 years that Mike was either out or, you know, working his way back, because the Houston gave them really good battles in the regular season. And I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean they beat them in the finals. I mean, the Jazz swept them 1 year and they still lost in the finals. But it does bring, it makes me think that, or confirms the fact that if you're going to have a dynasty, you need to have so many things come together. Like when it came to the Warriors, you had Steph sign a value contract because of his ankle. Klay and Draymond signed before the cap spike, and even their deals were bargain contracts. Then you have the cap spike without any smoothing, and KD becomes available. With Jordan, you have a top five player in Scottie Pippen alongside him on a bargain contract, and you're able to fill out the roster as a result of that. When he wanted to get out of town, he was locked up and he didn't really have the option to, whereas in today's NBA, he's likely gone before those six titles. And I don't think that necessarily should take anything away from Jordan. I think that that's something you can factor in, and it makes for interesting conversation. I don't think that it's a knock against him when you bring up things like that. It's just a reflection of how different the NBA was back then. And, you know, in some ways, I think that that version of the NBA was something that fans connected with a little bit more because you had more stability. And that's something we've talked about many times.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, I mean, you kind of talking about this makes me kind of just begs the question for me is, do you think it's possible for a team to win six titles in 8 years in the modern NBA anymore?
I don't think so.
And if it's not, it feels like that argument is less. Well, hold on. Let me make the case, and then I'll you know, make the rebuttal. If that's the case, it's really not fair to hold that against LeBron. But then again, it wasn't the case before Jordan, and it's not the case after Jordan. Like, right. I mean, maybe in the 70s, but the 80s, no one won six titles in 8 years.
Yeah, and you have to be drafted into a good situation. Like, I think there's an argument, like, so much of this has been done in bad faith, but I think people are correct in pointing out, you know what, Jordan wouldn't have lost the way that LeBron lost in 2011. I think that's fair to acknowledge. But Jordan drafted into the Cavs situation where they basically botch all of the picks those first 7 years, and they built a good team. But you didn't draft a Scottie Pippen. Like, Jerry Krause, even though he was made out to be the villain in this documentary, made some really big moves and rounded out the roster very well. And you know what? Maybe Jordan, if he was in that situation in 2011 and was as young as LeBron in that situation, maybe he does struggle that same way. Like, we talk about struggles in the finals differently than we talk about struggles at other points in their career. So it's really hard to make that comparison. But you have to be drafted in the right situation. You have to have so many things go well. And that's one of the things that gets tricky when you start comparing all these players in the all-time great conversation.
Yeah, I think that's really the thing that kind of, like, I think Klosterman on Simmons kind of talked about how the debate can really be framed as people arguing two different things, which is, Jordan fans will argue that Jordan's the greatest basketball player ever, and LeBron fans will argue that he's the best basketball player ever. Mm-hmm. And I actually really liked that distinction, which is like Jordan's impact is more intangible. LeBron, I think LeBron fans, I think rightfully think he's a better, like, basketball player, if you just add up skill set, at their peaks. But so much of the Jordan intangibles are make it so messy. It's the six titles in 8 years that, you know, everyone kind of pretends is six straight.
I really, really want to get into that. So hold that thought for a second. I do want to acknowledge one question in our Twitch feed from Mets Rule 4 asking, do you guys think that the 14 Spurs, 16 Warriors, and 17 Warriors were better than any team MJ faced? I will say the 17 Warriors, I definitely do. I think that it was the most talented basketball team that's ever been assembled. I would say those teams are more talented, but relative to the competition, because that's the qualifier we always have to have. I don't know if I can agree that relative to the competition and the rest of the pack, those teams were better back then than those teams that LeBron faced in the finals. I think naturally teams just get better over time. I think basketball teams and players all get better. So that's what makes these comparing teams two decades apart so tricky. I do think that the 2013 and 2014 Spurs really are firmly belong in the conversation for top 10 team of all time. I think the 2013 Spurs and the 2016 Warriors are two of the best teams to ever not win a championship. But it does get so tricky because you need the lucky breaks along the way. Obviously expansion. I was actually a little surprised expansion wasn't brought up talking about that Bulls run, because that was a big thing. Was
brought up by the documentary?
Yeah.
You know it wasn't going to be brought up. Come on.
I thought it would at least be mentioned, because you did have a Bulls core that.
Hey, we got to beat the shit out of Scrubs for 20 games a year.
The league was a little watered down as a result of expansion, and I fully understand why Kraus didn't get more credit, but he does deserve credit, especially with a third repeat. You have Mike and Scotty, but the way to round out their roster and develop another good supporting cast is very, very impressive when you look back on it.
Dude, his draft record is actually amazing. He drafts Pippen, who wasn't a surefire uber superstar. It's not like he was a first overall pick. Yeah. He drafts Kukoc. He also, Bomani was talking about this. It didn't work out. The guys didn't work out in Chicago, but he drafted Ron Artest, Tyson Chandler, and Jay Williams.
Mm-hmm.
And that obviously derailed due to an off-court incident. He drafted Zach Randolph?
Yeah. Well, didn't they? He drafted Zach Randolph and then traded him for the pick that became Tyson Chandler as well.
Oh, I didn't know that. Either way, point is, the guy like had a good eye for talent. Like, he's being made out to be this villain, and maybe he was to some extent. I mean, the idea of
Reinsdorf skated, man. It was funny.
Dude, Reinsdorf, my former boss, kind of, at my old network. Like, Jesus Christ. How does Jordan not feel resentful to him? That's so weird that he let, in a documentary, his hate for Kraus was so significant that he just says, meh, that it was his fault. He was the one, like, it's like he was in Reinsdorf's ear making him make these bad decisions.
Mm-hmm. No, no.
It's wild to me.
It was absolutely wild, but it's, you know what? It was a lot of fun. And you mentioned Bomani. He if you guys haven't checked it out, he did do a very good series called Bulldozed on all the different teams that those Bulls teams beat. All those great teams, including the Cavs. I really enjoyed the Cavs because that was before my time. But just a breakdown on how good those teams were. And one thing, even though the documentary wasn't that critical, it does make me miss when sports were just a little more celebrated and
simple.
Every player shouldn't be a polarizing issue. Like, we should not be at that stage with Luka Doncic. We should not be at that stage with Trae Young. If you had Trae Young in that NBA, you're going to wait 7 years before you start really diving into his flaws and whatnot. Like,
you wouldn't
celebrate a little bit more.
You wouldn't, Justin, because losing teams just didn't get talked about. I think that's the biggest thing, is like, you just kind of like, there wasn't enough attention on the league yet to have it be a 12-month sport with people, one, breaking down every young star way too early, and building them up and then tearing them down way too early. And then also this breathless coverage of games that don't matter to pretend like you're a savant.
Yeah.
Really fun Hornets Kings game on the West Coast. Like, oh, come on. Like, you know what I mean?
I forget who said it, but they said, sometimes I like to tweet out LeVert in all caps just to see who responds.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. So funny.
It's so good.
Yeah, like, I just feel like that breathless coverage. Yeah. The breathless coverage of the NBA actually, on Twitter, actually hurts the way it's talked about, because, you know, it's like the whole, like 1% of the population is on Twitter, but 100% of media members are on Twitter.
Yeah.
So like, we see this conversation.
It's a media playpen. It's 100% of media.
And I'm just as, and it's not just a media playpen, because they're influenced by the people that are also on there, because it just feels more important than it is. Like, even to us, we talk about how it's not important, and we're still sitting here fuming over the latest thing Twitter cares about. So like, you see these arguments, you're producing The Jump, and you see a breathless argument about, someone makes the case that Luka Doncic is a top two player in the NBA. And then you see people fighting about it, and you go, huh, that's an interesting segment. And then you build it, and then all of a sudden it becomes, you know, like, this perception becomes reality. So I just think that the breathlessness of Twitter actually kind of hurts the discourse on a macro level, in ways that people who don't even use Twitter are affected by.
No, I completely agree. And one point I want to get to when we're talking about the situation both LeBron was drafted into and what Jordan had in Chicago, I think the documentary does make it pretty clear, and even Scotty admits it, that Jordan was a big part of him developing into the player he became. Him becoming a top five player was very much a result of Michael pushing him out of his comfort zone. And who knows, if LeBron, let's say in his first 7 years, gets drafted alongside Kyrie, and they're able to go through those early stages of their career together, maybe their relationship is different. Maybe things change, but I think Jordan deserves credit for how good Scotty became. And these are the type of things that it's very tough to assign a value to that. But when it comes to the GOAT debate, there's so many different things that people will prioritize and things that they care about, that it's hard for me at this stage of my life, and after talking basketball as much as I have, to actually get really emotional when there are a few worthy candidates. So this is going to be a very shocking thing for our listeners, especially the ones on Twitch, that, I mean, our pictures are literally next to a LeBron graphic right now. But let's get into some of our GOAT takes. And I'm going to let you go first, Carter, because I have tweeted about this recently and I kind of want to expand on that. But let's get your fresh take on the GOAT debate.
It's such a wishy-washy thing, because I do think LeBron is the best basketball player ever. I think if I were starting a team from scratch, I would take LeBron. I think that so much of what he does fits the modern, is timeless in a lot of ways. He can play in any era. He can shoot, he can pass, he can rebound. I have to make no roster concessions. I don't need an off-ball point guard. I don't need a rim protecting center. I don't need to do anything. I can do whatever I want with pick number two of this hypothetical fantasy draft. I do think that the invincibility that Jordan felt like he had, it doesn't not matter. And I remember after 2016, when these GOAT debates really, really started in earnest, I think that's really the first time that a large, loud group of people started saying, this guy's the GOAT.
Well, which is why Jordan decided to make this documentary.
Which is why we're having this conversation.
Which is really endearing, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I think that, you know, the thing with the GOAT is that the GOAT actually doesn't mean anything. It's an absolutely value. It's an empty value statement. Greatest of all time. GOAT is whoever the majority of people decide is the GOAT.
Right.
You know, like if we all woke up tomorrow and decided Sidney Crosby was the GOAT of hockey, he'd be the GOAT.
Right.
Like, and Gretzky wouldn't be the GOAT anymore, because it's just what the latest thing we think about. That's why old people are like, you guys are fucking stupid. It's Wilt. And we don't care, because we're like, nah, we all moved on.
Mm-hmm.
I think that when, so to that end, you know, it's kind of up to LeBron to change the narrative widely enough to become that. And until he does, if he might be even, you know, it's kind of a, you know, you got to dethrone the king. You can't draw even with him. There's mm-hmm. only, and like, so to that end, like, I think the GOAT's Jordan, because enough people think he is. I know that's like a really wishy-washy way to frame it, but I don't think there's a better way to. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that?
So in my opinion, there's three players that if you tell me that you believe that they are the GOAT, they are the best player of all time, I'm perfectly okay with that. And that's Kareem, Jordan, and LeBron. I think your decision on which one of those is one A, B, and C depends on what you value. I think from a legacy standpoint, no player is ever going to have the same impact or matter more than Michael Jordan. And I think that that's something that's important to acknowledge, because while Bird and Magic got the game off of tape delay, Jordan was the first modern star, and the coverage reflected that. I mean, this was a phenomenon. He elevated the NBA to the level that it's at today. And a player today can't do that, because the NBA is already at that level. He influenced so many players and probably is a big part of why we've seen this big surge of talent in the NBA, is because so many players want to be like Mike. He was a pioneer when it came to the shoe game. All of that stuff is incredibly important, and there isn't the possibility for a player to do that today. So to me, it's really, really tough. I don't think a player can touch Jordan from a legacy standpoint. And there's the storybook aspect of 6-0 in the finals. And I tweeted about this today. For those of you that don't know hockey, Wayne Gretzky, in my opinion, falls into that Michael Jordan category. You might argue that Sidney Crosby or Connor McDavid is a more well-rounded player, more talented player, but nobody's going to be able to touch him from a legacy standpoint. He has more goals than anybody in hockey history. And here's the crazy thing. If he didn't score a goal in his entire career, he still has more career points than anybody else in the history of the league. He has that many goddamn assists. Like, it is absolutely absurd. He won 8 straight MVPs, 9 in 10 years. Yes, you can talk about the game. Guys were basically playing goalie with pillows strapped, duct taped to their legs and whatnot. And I think there's certainly an argument that someone like Sidney Crosby is a more talented player. Just like I feel like, in my opinion, LeBron is the best player of all time. I'm not really going to fight anyone if they pick Jordan. I'm not going to fight anyone if they pick Kareem. I mean, he's the all-time scoring leader. The longevity of his career is absolutely absurd. I think all of those players are worthy candidates. So to me, I'm comfortable saying, hey, I understand and respect the legacy that Jordan had. I think it's perfectly reasonable to think that he's the best player of all time. Personally, I think while all three players are foolproof when you draft them, they're likely going to win one title in their career at least, no matter what situation you put them in. To me, it's just LeBron would be the decision I'd make.
Yeah, I think that it's really interesting, ultimately, knowing that this is a guy that changed the game. I forget who it was. I think it was Maples. Getting two shout outs in one pod for Jason Maples.
Right after he left Twitter. He came on just because.
He quit Twitter?
Well, so he had left Twitter during this break and came back just for the Last Dance to have goat fights. And now the Last Dance is gone, he left.
I've been on Twitter less.
These guys have the audacity to act like everybody's on the Clutch payroll. These are your men.
God.
God. Damn it. And we gave him two shout-outs.
Two. Anyway, Maples tweeted after the first episode, there's a play where Jordan just absolutely puts Bird in cement shoes and shakes him for an easy pull-up jumper. And like, he was like, something like Bird had to be like, what the fuck is this? When Jordan put the move on him. And I just thought, this guy is a different type of basketball player than any basketball player that existed. Mm-hmm. But a lot of basketball players, I'm not saying they move like they're as good as Jordan, they're as talented as Jordan, as successful as Jordan, but I'm saying a lot of basketball players move like Jordan, yeah, and dribble like Jordan and pull up for jumpers like Jordan. Like the level of athlete, like he was like a whole generation early with how much more athletic and the way he played the game. Compared to his peers, especially in the late 80s and early 90s.
Well, I think another factor, too, is the fact that it happened in Chicago. Like, you look at some of these people that were speaking in the documentary, like Mike Wilbon, Jay Adonde, like all these guys.
A lot of Northwestern grads, if you know what I'm saying.
Guys that their careers elevated alongside Jordan. And Jordan was the guy that brought their favorite sport to the level that it's at today. Like, if LeBron had his exact same career where he was drafted, didn't win one in the first 7 years, goes to Miami, comes back to the city that drafted him. If that city was New York, there we'd be having a completely different conversation. Even if every single event was identical, even if every player on the rosters were identical, if he had that exact same career in New York, just because of the influence that you have, the media members that came up there, the impact it would have on that city would be completely different. And these are the context and the factors that go into these debates.
I would like to say, though, it hurts Jordan or LeBron that he played for three different teams.
Oh, absolutely. It just feels worse.
I don't care what you say. It just feels worse when you're hopping around. I know it's not woke. I know it's not the way we're supposed to talk about players. But the idea of, like, there's really – I know that the Wizards thing happened, but come on. We all know that's a throwaway.
I'm really, really happy you got to this point because I completely forgot about it. I think it's impressive if he wins three titles with three different teams, but I do think
it still feels like it'd be better if he won all of them with the Cavs.
It hurts him. It hurts him in the number of voices willing to jump up and defend him to that level, because I don't feel like getting in Twitter fights every single day. And I really hope someday the Cavs have a player that doesn't even have to win a damn title, but just a all-star, a very good player. Let's say like a Reggie Miller type, somebody that I'm willing to go to bat for every single day, because the two best players that the Cavs have had have both left the team sometimes multiple times. And I think it hurts him. Like, he has the LeBron fans that will follow him no matter what. And you know what? I'm still a fan of LeBron, but I'm not at the degree where I'm going to go out of my way to fight people online and defend his honor. That's where it definitely hurts him. It hurts him that Miami and Cleveland fans aren't going to go to war the same level they would if he spent his entire career with those franchises. Miami fans are never going to defend him the way that they defend Dwayne Wade. Cavs fans, I think, will defend him, but I do think that the amount of support he gets dulled by the fact that he jumped around so much.
Yeah, it just feels like the narrative is there, and I think it hurts Shaq's legacy. Like, I can't believe I was actually I know I just suggested we wrap soon, but here I'm taking us on a whole new tangent. Like, it's so weird to me as someone who grew up watching the teams that Kobe is a no-brainer ahead of Shaq in so many historical rankings. Mm-hmm. When Shaq was the biggest cheat code of my like conscious basketball watching life.
Mm-hmm. Oh, actually, you know what? Let's bring this up, because I think Shaq 2001 is the greatest individual season any player has ever had. And if you want to enter that in the GOAT debate, or if you want to go the Wilt angle, I'm going to disagree with you, but I'm not going to think you're crazy. Shaq is absolutely absurd how good he was at his absolute peak. What a freak he was. And the people that think that he couldn't play in the modern NBA are absolutely absurd. Well, because
yeah, he was just like so overwhelming and so overpowering. And Kobe's late post prime really is what helped him so much. But like, there was nothing like this guy. The 2001 finals, which we have playing right now up on the Twitch stream, one of his best games from that series, he is beating the shit out of Defensive Player of the Year Dikembe Mutombo in the series.
Well, I mean, the highlight went around of when people were saying, and to his credit, let's point out that Draymond never said he could lock up Shaq.
No, just dorks, dumbasses.
Dorks were the ones that said that. But for the people that said that, there's the clip of Shaq posting up David Robinson, and his footwork is so absurd, and then he just bodies him. Absolutely crushes him. He fakes him out and dunks on him and drops him to the ground. And that's goddamn David Robinson. This guy is a freak. Look at what Joel Embiid is doing. Now, more athletic, better footwork.
And like just an extra mentality like 50 pounds.
extra 50 pounds and a mentality to just kill people. Like Shaq was absolutely that dude. And you know what? This is once again getting to my point where I just feel, and this was something that has developed ever since the decision, but I just want basketball to be celebrated a little bit more than it is, because especially you look around today's NBA, there is so much damn talent, and we can have interesting conversations and debates without going to the levels that we are currently at. It's just getting tiresome, and I am really appreciative of this Chasedown community, the Discord chat that we have. The conversations and different perspectives. Some of them I will absolutely, and I will tell you in the moment that you are crazy when you say the things that you do. You listeners that have received that response from me, you know who you are. But I am appreciative of the community that we've built, and that's really my hope, is that we pivot to appreciating basketball.
Make basketball fun again.
Yeah, if anyone's got some red hats, we can add the slogan to that. But that's my biggest takeaway from this documentary. It didn't really bring a whole lot new to the table. I was all very familiar with this, even though a lot of it was before my time. I was alive, but not watching basketball, and certainly not the same way I do now. I've always gone back and watched old series and highlights and lived off of that, and I like to be somewhat of a basketball historian in that way, so it was nice to reflect and go back, because we're starved for basketball these days.
Yeah, it's been fun looking back on it. I know we've complained about the discourse, but ultimately I'm glad this documentary exists, I'm really excited for basketball to get back. Hopefully we can do it safely, but when it's back, I'll be happy to see it. That's all I'll say on that front.
And I want to acknowledge Stowe commenting in our Twitch feed. His fiance had some feedback for Carter. Tell the guy in the bottom he needs a nice backdrop. I don't want to look at his bed.
Listen, I actually considered a little inside baseball here. I've considered looking into a green screen for the both of us, for a nice textured background behind us. But I just haven't. I just didn't feel like it was. I wasn't ready to make that. Pull the trigger on that purchase.
Yeah, you know what? I'm not. And budgets be tight right now, Cardi.
Yeah, and Joe, tell your fiance that there are times in life where you have your own office, and then you have a child, and then your office becomes a nursery. So,
and luckily, I still have my office in all its wonderful glory. Because as I pointed out before, I am not a breeder.
You are not a breeder. highly recommend it for anyone who's interested, but ultimately you do you lose some square footage. I'll tell you that much.
You hate to see that, Carter. You're getting dragged on Twitch, but you know what? I want to give a shout out not only to our listeners but everybody on Twitch. My podcast consumption is down with this quarantine, especially when it comes to sports, because there aren't sports. So for all of you that have stuck around, I really do appreciate it. This is a fun outlet and one of the few opportunities I get to talk basketball, even if it is reflecting on old games. So I really, really do appreciate it. And it's nice to be here talking to my co-host Carter once again. Good to be with you, buddy.
Love you, pal. Take us home.
All right. So I want to give a thanks again to everybody. Remember, if you want to support the podcast, the best way to do so is by leaving a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of our Discord chat that we have referenced a few times in this podcast, you can send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. And you can also support us on Twitch, twitch.tv/chasedownpod. If you have Amazon Prime, throw us a free...
And join us. We got video. We got highlights. We got all this. We got a lot of fun stuff going on in the Twitch stream. It's not just the pod audio in video form. We got extra goodies for you if you come join us on the stream.
Yeah, and you can come pitch in, ask us questions. We love the feedback and the interaction, so that's a lot of fun. We're working on getting the videos uploaded to YouTube as well for people that consume podcasts that way. We want to do whatever you guys want. Let us be the podcast you want to see. So if you have feedback as well, we welcome that at chasedownpod@gmail.com. Massive thanks to all of our listeners, everybody watching live. Yeah, I don't know what else to really add to this. So until next time, go Cavs.